So welcome, everyone, to Perspectives from the Field, a podcast series of the State Policy Advocacy Resource Center, or SPARC. This series is designed to engage experts in the child welfare field to reflect on key advocacy issues and strategies to advance child welfare reform across the country. Today, we are very honored to talk to four individuals who are involved with Foster Club, a national network of young people who are currently in or have had lived experience with the foster care system. Their advocacy efforts to date are impressive and inspirational, and we'll talk to them about the difference their advocacy efforts are making in their lives, as well as the lives of other young people in foster care. So welcome, all of you. And first we have Ashley Cooper. Ashley is 22 years old. She lives in Idaho and is a Level 2 All-Star. This means that she trains new All-Stars for Foster Club to become effective advocates for child welfare reform. Ryan Cummings is 21 years old and is from Seattle, Washington. He's a 2014 Foster Club All-Star. Alex McFarland is from Ohio and currently lives in Oregon. He worked for the state of Ohio as a transitional living coordinator and now works with Foster Club. And finally, Tim Bell is 27 years old. He's from Washington State. As the Director of Policy and System Change for Foster Club, he is an adult supporter for the All-Stars. So, Tim, I think I will ask you to start by talking a little bit about Foster Club as well as the All-Star program. Can you tell our listeners what that's all about?
Absolutely, absolutely. And might I say what an honor it is to be joining you today. Foster Club's mission is to lead the efforts of young people in and from foster care to become connected, educated, inspired, and represented so they can realize their personal potential and contribute to a better life for their peers. At Foster Club, we believe that youth in care are the experts about many aspects of foster care. Acknowledging their expertise, our staff, our board, and our outreach members include young people all across America who have experienced foster care in the decision-making process. So that's a little blurb about Foster Club. However, sort of the shining jewel of our program is the Foster Club All-Star Internship, and that is a summer-long internship where young people from all across the country join us here in our national headquarters in Seaside, Oregon. They join us for approximately half a summer, and we work on leadership skills. We work on having young people turn their personal stories into stories of power to better the system, not only for themselves, but for their peers. And fortunately, we have several people who have gone through the All-Star internship, rather. Ryan is a current All-Star. Ashley is a Level 2 All-Star, and I'm sure she'll explain a little bit more about what that means later on. But the All-Star internship, just like I said, is sort of the shining jewel of our program, and it's where we derive a lot of our thoughts about foster care is through these intensive sort of pressure cooker interactions that we have over the course of the summer with our interns.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that explanation. We're honored to have all of you with us. We know what an incredible contribution Foster Club has made to the national advocacy scene, and we're really looking forward to hearing your perspectives on state advocacy work. So my first question for all of you is, all of you have had some experience advocating on behalf of youth in transitioning from foster care. And how has that experience shaped your lives? What difference do you think it's made for you? What difference do you think you've been able to make for other youths in and transitioning from foster care by becoming an advocate? Ryan, maybe we'll start with you.
All right, thanks. Well, I guess I'll start off by saying that my advocacy work began back when I was 14. My mentor introduced me to a statewide youth advisory board that changed my life forever and has helped shape me into the young leader I am today. The board is called Passion to Action, and I've been volunteering with them for 6 years now, since 2008. This board, we work internally within Washington's Children's Administration with policymakers, healthcare officials, and the community at large to make positive changes within the foster care system. Mostly we do this by providing input on policies, practices, and procedures within Children's Administration and the Department of Social and Health Services. Another statewide youth advocacy board I'm involved with is called Mockingbird. Mockingbird works externally from Children's Administration, advocating for policy reforms and promoting new legislation to improve services for youth in care. Additionally, I am the Washington State Youth Representative on the Supreme Court Commission for Youth and Foster Care. This commission is comprised of nearly 20 members that are high-ranking in the state of Washington that have the ability to drastically improve the foster care system. Some of our board members include the president of the Superior Court Judges Association, the superintendent of public instruction, co-chairs of the Foster Parent Association, and many more. The reason I want to draw attention to this commission is that because we have such a passionate and powerful group of professionals all coming together to discuss what is going on in the child welfare system, we have a unique opportunity to impact system change at a larger level. An example of this I would like to illustrate would be 2 years ago when myself and the commission participated in a leadership conference hosted by Mockingbird in Seattle. At this conference, we heard some of the life journeys foster youth all across Washington State experienced while in care, and then reforms that the youth felt would make foster care better for future generations to come. One of these reform suggestions revolved around prudent parenting standards for the state of Washington. Foster youth felt that they had missed out on some of the normal childhood experiences that young people undergo simply because they were in foster care. And these youth wanted foster parents to have more freedom to make decisions about the youth that were in their care. A couple of examples they gave really resonated with me those years ago, and I would like to share them with you guys today. A major one of the issues was the inability to play contact sports in school and on local teams without social worker approval and biological parents' consent. This was often challenging because social workers would not respond or get approval from the biological and parents to meet the deadlines for tryouts for the sports teams. And sometimes they simply just denied the request for fear of liability issues the state would face if injuries were to occur. Additionally, I can remember a youth speaking about not having the opportunity to go on a 2-week sailing expedition to Costa Rica because the youth social worker was not able to give them permission to go because they didn't receive permission from the youth biological parents. They sent emails, and the youth biological parents never responded, and so they couldn't get permission. The youth won a grant from an essay contest that was supposed to pay for them to go in the amount of $3,000. However, because they couldn't get the permission signed by their biological parents, they were not allowed to go on the trip. One of the last issues I want to talk about was sleepovers. It was a really hot topic at the conference because youth explained that in order to spend the weekend over at a friend's house, background checks had to be done on everyone in the household beforehand. The youth that was speaking explained how uncomfortable it was to have to tell their friends that because they were in foster care, background checks had to be performed, and how often they would come up with excuses as to why they couldn't hang out with their peers. These issues prompted the commission to take action and start a legislative movement to give foster parents the ability to make these kinds of decisions without fear of liability repercussions in Washington State. I'm happy to report that because of our conversations after the conference and the action that the commission took, the prudent parenting standards were passed earlier this year in March or April and will be implemented soon. This is just a few examples of some of my experiences with advocacy, and I look forward to further improving the foster care system in the future.
Wow, that's an excellent list, Ryan. Thank you for sharing that with you. It must feel great to have been a part of those efforts. Ashley, what kinds of efforts have you been involved with? How has it made a difference, do you think?
So I started out advocating for children and really being a part of their lives and wanting to help when I traveled across the country on a youth ministry team. And that was really my first leadership experience. And after that, I realized that I was really defiant to wanting to have anything to do with the foster care system because of how my experience went. And once I was able to meet with my independent living worker, she realized that I had leadership potential, and they were having a meeting to start the Idaho Youth Foster Youth Advisory Board. And she tricked me into going to that meeting because she said that I would be able to see my brother, and I did get to see my brother, but she said I didn't have to go to the meeting. but I went anyways, and that kind of started my advocacy for foster kids, and I really fell in love with it, and that's what made me go to school, back to college in general. So I now go to Boise State University for social work and political science, and we have a program there called Impact Scholars that are trying to help foster youth graduate, because only 2% of foster kids who go to college out of the 50% that actually go to college graduate. And so we're trying to heighten that number. Also, I am the board chair of the Idaho Foster Youth Advisory Board. And because of being a part of the board, I applied for the Foster Club internship. I got accepted, and that kind of jet set, you know, and furthered my interest in helping kids in foster care. After the Foster Club internship last year, last summer, I was able to be a part of the YADA network, which is the Young Adult Technical and Training Assistance Network. And through that, I was able to work with the Center for the Study of Social Policy, and they went around and chose 15 programs that had best practices. They were youth approved. They were all successful and had data to back them up. And that really kind of got my interest sparked in policy. And so one of my goals is to help change policy for the foster care system. And I would really love to start that in Idaho and then maybe work on a national level, but my heart really is in Idaho. Also, I have just joined a three-year term on the Idaho State Juvenile Justice Commission, and I think that's really important too, because juvenile kids, juveniles in the juvenile system and foster kids have a lot of the same issues. After they leave the juvenile system, sometimes they don't have a place to go, or they already were foster kids. So Idaho State is really trying to bring those two programs together and communicate with each other for the better of both systems. For the board, we have been working on a foster kid bill of rights, a sibling bill of rights. We're trying to put together peer mentoring groups, and we would like to implement and start working on tuition programs so that it is easier for foster kids to graduate and kind of have that weight lifted off of them. And on our board, there are some amazing kids, and most of us have been together since the start 2 years ago. And one thing that I really admire about them is that I get to be an example to them, and they push me to be a better professional advocate. And so I'm just really lucky to have them in my life, and they really inspire me, and I'm going to try my best to do whatever I can for them and to help them become professional advocates too.
Well, that sounds wonderful, and it sounds like you're a role model, not just for the young people in your life, but also for many of the adults in your life, I can tell. So that's great. And Alex, you've been involved in local youth board as well, is that right? Can you tell us a little bit about what you've accomplished in those?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started doing advocacy when I was 17 with the local youth advisory board in my county. And at the time, I was just a kid who worked at a pet store who just talked a lot. And I later joined our state youth advisory board, and I was elected president. At the time, the board was under another organization, and we didn't have a formal relationship with our child welfare system. And one of the biggest things that I focused on, and I felt was my biggest accomplishments, was fighting for the board to get funding, because the board was under another organization, we didn't have any funding. I was successful in obtaining a line item in our state's budget, which allowed funding for all existing county boards and any new one that would come up, as Ohio is a county-based child welfare system. It was a shift for the state, because up until that point, many people thought youth voice was important, but they really hadn't invested in that up until then. Eventually, things were going so well that in 2012, I was appointed to a new National Policy Council directly working with the Department of Health and Human Services. I think this was a great opportunity for me, and I've loved my participation on the council in shaping national policies and how they relate to Ohio's child welfare system. Now I've become a national advocate, and it's really created many opportunities for me and helped shape me into the person I am today. Total, I spent about 5 years on the board until last year when I got a job working for the state. Eventually, my and others' advocacy led to the creation of two jobs for former foster youth at our state child welfare agency to work with transition-age foster youth on a new project. I was working daily with the people who were in charge of child welfare, and in this job, I revised the Youth Rights Handbook made in 2009 by the Youth Advisory Board, and now it exists as an official document to be given to youth across Ohio 12 and older. I also helped write our five-year state plan for child welfare for transitional independent living services. I had moved beyond just sharing my story, and I was really crafting the direction of Ohio's independent living and transitional youth services for the next 5 years. All in all, it was a long road for me, particularly developmentally. I was definitely a different person when I started advocacy. It forced me to mature. It provided me an avenue in which I learned many pro-social skills and provided me with opportunities for peer mentoring. I've had very few positive role models in my life, particularly male ones, and this was something that plagued my teenage years. I was pretty mature and made poor choices when I was younger. I tell people the Alex you see today is not the Alex that you see before, and it's definitely true. At the core, I'm the same person, but I have many behavioral problems and mental health issues, and really being a part of the Youth Advisory Board helped me overcome that. As an advocate, I knew I had the responsibility and an image to uphold. And as I've aged, my role has become less of a voice of a consumer and more of a person who can and should empower the next generation forward. Admittedly, this has been a difficult transition. It's an easy pitfall, I think, for many foster youth to fall into. It's easy to let your story and your advocacy consume you, and many say they want to be a social worker or they want to be involved in changing the system that affected so much, but sometimes I think consequently we neglect our own dreams. Being a young leader became my identity, and it's what people know me for. And reality, that can't be a lifelong goal for me. I think it's crucial to provide these opportunities for advocacy, but to make sure that youth are still working towards their dreams. I can always make a difference no matter my job, and that is what I intend to do. But I still have to look out for my own well-being before I help others, and that can be difficult for many foster youth to do, I think, when you care so much.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that. You all have told us about some incredible accomplishments that you've had by being part of these boards and these commissions. It sounds like these boards and commissions have also allowed you to unearth some pretty incredible leadership skills. So we appreciate those stories. You know, one of the things that we hear from state advocates all the time is child welfare is so big. There are so many issues to pursue. You could talk about prevention. You can talk about early intervention. You can talk about how you help young people who, for whatever reason, end up having to be separated from their parents. And you can talk about permanency. The list goes on and on. And so I'm just wondering from your perspective, and given your experience, what are the issues that you're most passionate about? What would you most like to advocate for in your life so you can make a difference for other youth in foster care?
This is Alex. I really think overhauling how we prepare teenage foster youth for success is one of the biggest issues right now. Presently, many states, they just don't invest in programs that prepare youth for independence. In Ohio, for example, they invest the least in the nation for child welfare out of 50 states. This is despite the fact that they have some of the highest rates of youth who age out in the country, which is about 1,200 per year. Yet I know many of the staff there well, including the directors, and they are wonderful, passionate people who are shackled by a government that doesn't believe investing in child welfare. It's egregious. The onus is placed on the youth to become successful at 18, when most youth in normal households aren't independent until they're 25 or 26. Another example is right here in Oregon, a state that has only about 300 youth who age out annually, yet they only serve 50% of them with independent living services. When I hear 50% are only given the opportunity to become successful, I hear a rate of failure. We spend about $8 billion annually on 26,000 kids who age out of the foster care system and incarceration, lost wages, and investment in social programs. But what if we invested this instead? Overall, the funding streams for child welfare are antiquated, and it leaves this imprint on families years later. If we reimagined how we funded child welfare, we could provide services to families and we can do better. I got the help I needed, but my mother was left with my siblings who did not enter care. I know from being a child, my mother was a good person and, frankly, a good mom who was trapped in a situation that no person could handle, and I was left to prepare myself for independence. The system didn't help her like it could have, and we're still dealing with that years later. Yet, prevention can take other forms, and I think Ashley was going to talk a little bit about that, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, prevention isn't the end-all, be-all, but I'm passionate about advocating for more preventative services for families. My dad, to his core, was an outstanding person, and ask anyone who spent 20 years with him, and they will vouch for that. For most of my life, he was a terrific father. He was a terrific father that loved us to the fullest, but every so often, he would have these outbursts of anger and depression, and it was taken out on us, and it got more frequent as we got older. We were removed from my father in 2007 for 4 months, then reunited after he completed some AA classes. And of course, he returned to drinking again, and having random outbursts. And I didn't hear from the child welfare system again until I was 20 years old. So this task of giving a child a better home to return to isn't as simple as saying, oh, you have an alcohol problem and occasional violent outbreaks. Go to AA and you're cured. Like, why isn't anyone asking, what is the real issue that is causing them to put their kids in harm's way? Some parents cannot afford a proper home for their children or enough food. Some have not emotionally healed from events in their life, and that affects the way they treat their kids. Some problems are generational. And like my dad, some could be unaware of health issues that can result in having no control over their actions. And I believe that if the state of Idaho would have done more to find the reason behind my dad's issues, which later we found out was Huntington's disease, he would have the medical, monetary, and emotional help he needs now, and my brothers and I would be able to have a better relationship with him like we deserve. Over all the help that foster youth receive or need, I would like to have a relationship with my parents. Most of the support I have in my life comes from my brothers. We help each other financially. We give each other bear hugs. I can look up to my brothers, and they celebrate my successes with me and vice versa. The times where it's hard to accept my father's reality of his disease, the four of us fall back on each other. Whatever the deep issues are, we need to provide the parents with proper resources and a safety net first, so that those other problems do not reoccur and children can feel safe returning home or not take them out at all. We need to give families a chance to stay together.
So, Ashley, you've made a very impassioned case for a whole family approach. And I think many people who are listening to this will take note of that. So, Ryan, what are your thoughts about what you're passionate about?
I actually want to go off a little bit deeper into what Ashley was talking about and the importance of having sibling connections, especially while you're in foster care. For myself, I believe that this is like one of the most important conversations that needs to be taking place across the country, that pertinence of keeping siblings together. The child welfare system's understanding of like sibling relationships and the roles that they play in the lives of foster youth has been improving and changing over the last couple of decades. We're coming to realize that when siblings are separated, it's damaging to their development and emotional well-being, and it can impact them for the rest of their life. I think keeping siblings together helps foster feelings of belonging and it helps develop a sense of like identity while you're in care, and you have those relationships with your siblings for the rest of your life. So it's really important that you have the opportunity to stay with them if possible while you are in care, or to have daily or weekly visitations with one another, and to try and foster those opportunities for youth while they're in care. I'm going to talk a little bit about my personal experience with this, so bear with me. And during my time in care, I was separated from my eldest sister during our fifth placement, around the time when I was 13. And when that happened, I felt like I was alone in the world, just for months to come. She was removed from our placement because our foster parents reached out to her social worker and asked for help. They asked for services like counseling because we had some behavioral issues that had been transpiring in the house, and they didn't necessarily know how to deal with it. It was just normal teenage stuff, but we needed help. And her social worker took it upon herself to place my sister into a group home because she believed that that was what was in her best interest, even against my foster parents' wishes. And this decision really tore us apart, tore me apart. I fell into a deep depression that I struggled with for months. I felt like my world had stopped. I'd lost the one thing that had helped me define who I was and motivated me to be strong and successful in my endeavors in school and in sports and in life in general. I'd been separated from my mother at 8 years old and placed in care with none of my belongings. It was just my sister and I that we were all that we had from our past. We were the only thing that we had to identify who we were. We were each other's rocks, and being separated made me feel like we were alone and lost to the world with no family left that really was going to be there for us. Over the next few years, we had very few visitations because her behaviors continued to spiral out of control. She really struggled with her anger, with everything that had happened in her life, and she was upset with our mom and the system, just having to go through foster care, and it wasn't fair, and she missed me, and it was a really rough period of time, and she wanted more than anything to numb the pain. And drugs and bad decisions led to about a dozen placements in group homes. And because she didn't get the help she needed when she was in the foster care placement with me, I lost that relationship with my sister. And I don't really have a strong relationship with her to this day. And the reason I share this experience is because I want to personify the importance of keeping siblings together in the same foster home, as I mentioned earlier, and the detrimental cause effects that occur when they're separated without regular visitation or support, just to keep them intact and working with one another and hanging out and just keeping that relationship alive. I missed out on that opportunity, like I said, yet I believe that having more conversations and training for state officials and social workers across the country will help keep those siblings together. They'll help inspire social workers to do more, to find placements that will take larger groups of two or three or four siblings, as well as inspire child welfare workers to come up with innovative ideas to promote and maintain sibling relationships that have been separated while in care, and get transportation for them to see one another on a daily or weekly or biweekly visitation schedule, so they can keep those relationships alive. One more thing I want to talk a little bit about, is I spent a week this summer in the internship at a foster club working at Camp to Belong. And this camp, I feel, really takes like a huge step in promoting sibling connections and rebuilding the relationships between siblings that have been separated. Camp to Belong is across the country. There's a large number of camps, and the one I went to is here in Oregon. And it's a week-long camp where they bring siblings that have been separated because of the foster care system, whether their sibling was adopted or in foster care or kinship, or they moved to another state. And they bring them together for a week. They take away all the labels. You're not adopted. You're not foster. You're not kinship. You're just children. And you're at this camp, and you get to hang out with your siblings and go horseback riding and swimming, just have fun, and really rebuild those relationships that have been damaged because of the separation. And it's programs like these, it's innovative ideas that people have come up with that really are helping progress. The helping progress sibling connections and bringing that idea to the table. Yet there's still a lot more work that needs to be done, and there's a lot of work that is being done.
Well, thank you, Ryan. I think what you've done is through your story helped to demonstrate to me how sometimes some of the most traumatic things that can happen to young people in foster care are avoidable, and I can't imagine anybody listening to that story and listening to you talk about what it meant to you, not being moved to do something about it, whether it be through a program, through a policy, through state legislation. It doesn't always have to be a big law to make a difference, and I think you've shown that beautifully. So thank you for sharing that. I think the last thing, you guys have all three of you, in your answers to these questions and your responses made an incredibly convincing case for me, and I think for our listeners, how important it is to have people who have experienced the system at the center of efforts to change the system for the better of young people who experience foster care. And I think what we hear a lot from state advocates is the question about not so much a question of whether to engage young people in their efforts, but more the question about how to engage young people in their efforts. And so I wonder if you, you know, as our kind of last response to our last question, could tell us if you had an advocate for 3 minutes and you had to tell them the thing that you think is most important to keep in mind as it relates to engaging youth voice in advocacy, in telling their story, in becoming part of the solution, what would you tell them? What's the most important to you that they know about your experiences?
Well, the first thing, my name is Ashley. The first thing that I would tell them is you cannot engage youth voice if you don't have the youth at the table. If there's an issue regarding the youth needs to be in the room discussing the issue with you. And there's not only is there a few youth who you see that have leadership skills and show promise in their future, but like if you can empower the youth all over, you know, the country, every single youth, and part of that is creating a network for them to of people that help empower them. So it's not just one youth, but also teaching them how to empower other youth. You know, tell the youth that their story is important. Always have their best interest in mind. It's not about what you want to accomplish. If you want to empower the youth, it's about what they want to accomplish. You know, and helping young people engage in strategic sharing, showing them how to share their story in an effective way that is not going to emotionally harm them as well. You know, we have a workshop called Strategic Sharing at Foster Club, and we go over with them the kinds of questions that they shouldn't have to answer and the kinds of questions that they can answer. And some questions, it's up to them whether or not they've emotionally healed from their past and they're willing to talk about that. But we don't want youth to get in front of an audience and have a breakdown or have some serious issues after that emotionally because they haven't healed from what's happened in their past, you know. So helping them heal from their past and then giving them an audience to share that with effectively so that they can be the best advocate that they can. And also make sure that what you know, as a state representative or as a youth advocate, making sure that what you and they are advocating for is youth-informed and also trauma-informed. And, you know, youth have dreams and they have goals, and sometimes you can embrace that and help them get there. So one of my goals, I have a 20-year goal of having a foster kid fund for kids in the Pacific Northwest. Like if they need money to for a down payment for a car, if they need tuition money or there's an emergency or anything, I would like to have them write an essay to me telling me how they're going to pay it forward, and then you know, I can help them with that, or you know, that kind of thing. And that's one of my goals, and I don't have all of it worked out yet to how exactly it's going to be and whatnot. But there's I've only come to that conclusion that I've wanted to do that because somebody instilled that desire in me. Somebody believed in me. And all I want to do is pay it forward. And there's other kids with other dreams, not just for helping foster youth, but kids who want to be veterinarians or police officers or whatever they want to do in life. You can instill that in them. And part of that is there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it.
Excellent. And don't be surprised if you have some advocates calling you trying to figure out what the right way is. And also helping you fulfill your dream. So thank you for sharing that. Alex, do you have thoughts about what would you tell advocates if you could tell them what's the best way to engage young people?
I think that many times youth are not able to contextualize their story in the bigger picture where lawmakers and policymakers can understand their story. And, I mean, who would? Most of their lives are spent in a system which, in an attempt to keep them safe, often hides them from its understandings of its inner workings and its rules. And youth have often normalized abuse or maltreatment because it's all they know. And to engage youth, you have to inform them of their rights from the beginning and start the conversation early and often. Youth then can begin to understand how their own stories fit into improving the child welfare system once they're better informed. I think bringing youth to the table as partners is critical. Youth engagement shouldn't be about youth sharing their stories. Its youth engagement practices should be integrated into all facets of service design and delivery of child welfare. The policy agenda then is set by the youth and led by their experiences. The need to find a youth to share a story is unnecessary because the youth are leading the process from the beginning. The benefits transcend policy reform, though. When we prepare youth as young leaders, we help them navigate their life histories and their own interpersonal relationships as they age. But the most important part of engaging them is making sure that they're prepared to share this experience, which Ashley did talk a little bit about. You know, well-intentioned policymakers and administrators often ask very detailed questions about the youth's past, and when youth are put up in front of them unprepared, you risk oversharing, and I think that it's an unfortunate consequence. But overall, youth as partners, I think, is one of the most critical pieces.
Thank you so much for that, and I think we do have some resources from Foster Club, which we'll talk a little bit later, that would help policymakers understand a little bit more about how to avoid those kinds of circumstances, but we appreciate you bringing it up. So last but certainly not least, Ryan, as one of the newer young people on the scene around this, what do you think about this?
Well, you know, if I was trying to explain to a child welfare professional on how to get their youth to be more engaged, I think I would steer our conversation more towards the importance of dealing with the trauma that youth experience because of being in foster care. It's important to understand that children go through the challenging situations of being separated from their siblings and their families and just struggling to find themselves while in care. This stuff affects them for the rest of their lives if they don't have support to help deal with it. And one of my favorite suggestions that I recommend to child welfare professionals is to get their young people involved with youth advocacy boards. It's so empowering to be in a room full of young people that all share similar experiences with one another of having been through the foster care system and being separated from their families, and just finally realizing while you're in that room that you're not alone, that there are other young people that have gone through those similarly challenging situations as yourself, and yet they're still managing to succeed in life and graduate school and talk about college in the future and advocate for change and just fight for something that they're all passionate about. It's inspiring for youth that are trying to move forward in their life that maybe necessarily haven't even thought about their future. When I joined Passionate Action and I learned that I wasn't alone in foster care, I began to feel a sense of hope again. That was really the point of my life when I came into my own and I realized that advocacy was going to become a part of my future and really was going to help me deal with some of the stuff that I had been suppressing for years. The other people were handling stuff in the board group Passion Action that I could relate to, and I could ask them for advice about how they were handling those situations and make adjustments in my life that made me stronger and happier and have gotten me to where I am today. I finally feel now like my future isn't doomed. I have the potential to do something great with my life and make a difference because of my opportunity to be a part of that board group and having these conversations with child welfare professionals and letting them know the importance of getting their youth involved with opportunities like advocacy really gives the ability for youth to recover and heal from those traumatic experiences in life, just being around other people that have undergo it. Especially since for years, like going through high school and junior high school, oftentimes foster youth don't have anyone to relate to. Like none of their friends are in foster care. They don't know what that is. They don't have anyone to talk about with it because it's just an uncomfortable discussion. So coming to these groups really gives them an opportunity to open up and work through some of those more challenging situations in life. And I just want more youth in the country to have the same opportunity that I had.
Wonderful. Well, that is no small goal. I really want to thank you all for sharing your thoughts with us. Any advocate listening to this, it's hard to imagine how you could move forward with your advocacy efforts without engaging the voices of young people. But I think what these amazing young advocates have taught us today is the responsibility we all have to ensure that it's not just a process to get our own goals met, but it's also a process that will help young people grow, help young people heal, and help young people achieve their own goals, probably more important than anything else that we do. So thank you so much to all of you. We really appreciate your time. We appreciate your thoughts. It's inspirational, to say the least. In closing, I'd also like to let you all know that Foster Club has incredible resources on their website. We will be posting, along with this podcast, many of those resources as well as the website address, so that if you're thinking about doing your own youth advocacy efforts, if you're thinking about joining a youth advocacy effort as a young person, if you're thinking about engaging the voices of young people in your advocacy work, that you will use these resources. They are both practical as well as critical to ensuring that it's a positive experience for young people as well. Thank you all for your time.